This is a day of national consecration. And I am certain that on this day, my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with a candor and a decision which the present situation of our people impels.
It was 1933, the year construction on the Golden Gate Bridge began, the year that Prohibition ended, the year the Ethel Waters classic Stormy Weather would become the most popular song in the country. A country that was deep in the middle of the Great Depression, a crisis that Franklin Delano Roosevelt did not shy away from when he gave his first inaugural address on March 4th.
This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, as the nation faces a new sort of stormy weather, we look at how President Trump is turning to the past to try to save his future from the coronavirus pandemic.
When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can go on.
They're basically digging through American history to try and find answers.
Gabby Orr covers the White House for Politico.
To try and find ways that might help them navigate the current situation that we're in. I've spoken with a number of Trump officials. One of them was a senior speechwriter for a cabinet official who told me that he went back and read Franklin Roosevelt's first inaugural address.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
That speech that he gave back in 1933, which contained the famous declaration, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
And after he read it again, just to try and get a better sense of how he might respond to the economic turmoil that we're facing as he starts to write speeches for the principal at his agency. Another person at the White House, Deputy National Security Advisor Matt Pottinger, actually read a copy of a book called The Great Influenza back in January after seeing the first cases of coronavirus go beyond mainland China. And funny enough, this is a book that George W. Bush recommended to the American people back in 2005 when he was facing the possibility of an avian flu pandemic in the United States. He read it on a summer vacation at his Prairie Chapel Ranch in Texas and then came back to the White House and said, maybe everybody would benefit from reading this book. And so, you know, fast forward 15 years and here we are, and members of this White House are basically trying to do the same thing, to just sort of desperately dig through the archives in order to find ways that might help them as they grapple with a pretty transformational moment in our history.
You mentioned FDR and, you know, that famous moment, that famous speech that he gave in his first inaugural address. When you think of President Trump, you don't necessarily like put him up there with the great orators of American presidency. I mean, do you think it really is possible for him to turn around his image, to, you know, successfully turn himself into a disaster president solely through language?
It's a good question. He has adopted different sentences, different ways that he's used, phrases that he's injected into his daily briefings to try and, you know, portray this in a certain way. He often talks about him being a wartime president now who is basically at battle against an invisible enemy.
I view it as a, in a sense, a wartime president. I mean, that's what we're fighting. I mean, it's a very tough situation. You have to do things. You have to close parts of an economy that 6 weeks ago, we're the best they've ever been. We had the best economy we've ever had. And then one day you have to close it down in order to defeat this enemy.
And so I do think that this president is more prone to sort of latching on to different catchphrases and then inserting them into every sort of public appearance that he gives, news conferences, chopper talk, White House briefings, and sort of using language that way. But no, I don't think that, you know, we should expect to see President Trump in any sort of fashion give a speech like FDR did back in the 1930s.
Are there examples we can point to in the past where a strategy like this has worked?
There are. I mean, if you go back and you look at the speech that President George W. Bush gave right after 9/11.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts.
That was sort of similar to the language that we're now hearing from President Trump, where he talked about just patriotism and the entire country coming together to face a crisis together.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation.
And I do think that that's sort of the tone that this president is trying to strike. It's the one that his advisors certainly want him to. But obviously, Trump is very different from George W. Bush, very different from President Barack Obama. It's more difficult to sort of expect him to rise above the moment, to sort of be able to shape his legacy in a positive way than it was perhaps for his modern predecessors.
This might be a weird question, but who makes the decisions about what the president says? Because sometimes he seems to be speaking totally off the cuff. Other times he seems like he's reading a script that he doesn't want to. There are even times we see language that appears to be scratched off or added onto his script literally last minute. Who do these decisions come down to? Like, is there someone in the White House specifically coming up with a strategy for how to frame him as a crisis president?
Ultimately, at the end of the day, it is always President Trump who decides what he is going to say in any given moment. No matter how many notes or speeches have been written for him, that's just his nature. That's the way that he likes to approach the bully pulpit. But there are certain White House aides who have been able to sort of get him to stick to the talking points in moments. One of them is Hope Hicks, his former communications director, who has recently returned to the White House to work with his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. She would often sort of give the president one page of bullet points to stick to guide his remarks. And that's something that he was able to do in those moments. And I do think that that's something that his advisors are doing for him now. He does have a team of speechwriters inside the White House. Stephen Miller is often engaged in those moments where they have to write significant speeches for this president, including the Oval Office address that he gave to the nation early on when the coronavirus first started to reach the United States. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's all determined in the moment by the president.
We just got another round of record-shattering unemployment numbers, more than 6 million claims, and deaths look like they're going to be in the 100 to 240,000 range, even with strict social distancing guidelines. I mean, with numbers like this, how do you think it's possible for Trump to detach himself from a national catastrophe? Like, how can he really separate himself from crisis?
It's tough for him to do that. I mean, I think if you look at what he's done so far, the one way that he has tried to sort of separate himself from this is to talk up the patriotism of this moment, to talk about his cooperation with state and local officials, to try and say that this is, as he and Vice President Pence have said, you know, a whole of government approach, so that if it goes one way versus the other, it's not only on him. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, you've heard him use that phrase over and over again, that this is a whole of government approach. But for the most part, I mean, presidents have benefited often from the public's trust during moments of crisis. These are the kind of moments that often shape presidential legacies. And so I do think that this president is extremely mindful of that and how this might impact him even after leaving office, whether that's, you know, next January or in 2025. And so this is something that's on the minds of White House officials. And I think it's one of the reasons why they are going back and studying history to try and figure out, okay, how do we get not only the country through this moment, but how do we get our boss, the President of the United States, through this in a way that doesn't have sort of a devastating impact on his legacy?
Gabby, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Also today,
if people wanted to wear them, they can.
The White House is set to release new recommendations on wearing face masks to prevent the spread of coronavirus after initially telling Americans they weren't necessary.
If people wanted to use scarves, which they have, many people have them, they can. In many cases, the scarf is better. It's thicker. I mean, you can, if you, depending on the material, it's thicker, but they can do that if they want. Now, a recommendation's coming out. We'll see what that recommendation is.
The White House's coronavirus response coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx, says officials are reviewing data on the effectiveness of masks and cautioned Americans not to get a false sense of security.
The most important thing is the social distancing and washing your hands. And we don't want people to get an artificial sense of protection because they're behind a mask.
The Politico Dispatch production team this week included Jenny Ament and Carlos Prieto, with help from Sadeep Reddy. Our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.